This is Marketing Spice, a podcast by Pemento.
Though there's been an enormous amount of growth in online, we're still fundamentally a nation of shopkeepers and fundamentally a nation of shoppers.
When it comes to brands and retailers behaving in a more human fashion, I think the most resonating stories are usually about people. Retailers need to think from that perspective and not just about product.
Hi there, I'm Paddy Woods and welcome back to Marketing Spice, the podcast from Pemento. In every episode, we look at all aspects of marketing, covering the latest trends, insights, and advice, meeting agency leaders from a variety of different fields along the way. But in this episode, we'll be talking about all things retail. It's an area that has seen unprecedented shifts since the start of the pandemic and is continuing to do so, with digital retailers looking to bricks and mortar and traditional retailers looking to how they can improve their online presence. So what do brands need to be thinking about right now as they look at their strategies for the future? Well, let's find out. This is Marketing Spice. So thanks again for listening, and let's meet our first guest to talk through some considerations around retail marketing for brands in 2022. Joining me is Greg Valance, who is the creative managing partner of Honey, a strategic and creative brand agency that focuses on helping brands make deeper connections with people to help create more value to their clients. Greg, it is great to have you here to chat through what's going on in the world of retail.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Greg, I've been reading lots around the demise of the high street. It's a conversation I seem to remember having about 10 years ago. But last year, we saw about 36,000 retailers go out of business. Lots of reasons: COVID, Brexit, and a lack of that digital transformation everyone's talking about. But we are seeing this huge shift to online behaviour, and I think that's here to stay. Yet also, bricks and mortar is taking this a resurgence. Research online, purchase offline is still huge, and the role of the store is changing. So in your opinion, in 2022, what should retailers and actually brands be doing to reinvigorate their brand to consumers?
That's a very good question. And to be honest, it's by no means a new question. And I seem to have been hearing this ever since I've been working within branding. There was a halcyon day, if you like, moment at the beginning of my career, and everything else now seems to have been the bigger stores closing, the bigger stores closing, the bigger stores closing. And of course, that's something now that gets amplified more and more through social media, the news, all the channels keep telling us that this is the end of traditional retail as we know it. And in fact, I've got a very good friend of mine who is, I would say, one of the country's leading retail experts, if you like, within buying and selling property and rental of properties. He's about to retire because he thinks the market is disappearing as well. So kind of it's validated from a practical perspective as well for those people who work with the bricks and mortar rather than just what gets sold through them. I do think it's a conundrum because whilst you've said we've seen 36,000 retailers go out of business in 2020, it would be good to know how many came into business during that period as well. If there was any sort of balance in terms of what went out the window, what came in through the door, because I think those other factors of Brexit and COVID have had a huge, huge impact on either the acceleration or the transformation of that demise. I do think that it has polarized very greatly. We saw during this COVID period a huge resurgence within local stores and the ability to connect with the store owners and therefore the brand owners in that particular case, if you're going to use that sort of language. But the interaction with people became something that was far smaller world. And I guess it's that smaller world environment that we've been reduced to through COVID in particular. My world has got an awful lot smaller during this period in terms of working from home, not traveling as much, certainly not traveling abroad, anything like I used to. And so that smallness seems to be something that's become more and more important for people. And so I guess the problem seems to be more for the bigger brands and bigger retailers rather than necessarily the small independent ones. The small is local is good does seem to be holding quite true.
I completely agree. I think with the demise of Arcadia and Debenhams and Topshop stalwarts off the high street, I suppose, going back 30, 40, 50 years, I definitely think smallness is the sort of the way to go. And I think actually what's really interesting is if you look at the FMCG, big FMCG brands, PepsiCo have created a direct-to-consumer brand where they are passing on stock that would have been destroyed back into direct to consumers, and they're going to have that direct relationship that often FMCG brands definitely don't have. So I think that's something that's really coming to fruition in the sort of in the future.
It does seem that the big store thing you mentioned, the Arcadia Group and BHS, etc., that have been probably the most high profile demises. They're the ones that seem to have been most easily replaced by the online experience. The lack of personal interaction within those stores was always something that, for example, set John Lewis apart or set Marks and Spencer's apart, that you always had that level of personality that you would be met with as you went into those stores. And the ones that you mentioned that have gone always seem to have that missing, which, of course, when you have an online experience, that is absolutely what's missing. So their replacement by an online experience seems to be more straightforward than some of the other slightly more surprising ones, I guess. And that resurgence, if it is a resurgence, by the way, of small is good and local is good, also seems to be met online as well. I can't remember a time that I've seen more brands that seem to have sprung out of nowhere during this last 2 years through social awareness, if you like, because that medium was never there to them before. So whilst we've lost a huge amount of 36,000 retailers, I would think there's a fair few go to meet that gap that that's created that have come in as an online retailer during this last period.
I think you're right. And actually going back and talking about the greatness of what John Lewis was, I think they're really struggling with what their store experience is.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about how do you create that experience in store? Because online you can browse and it's easy to find things. In store, it's a lot harder and it's a lot more complicated to go through these big stores, almost warehouse style stores, where you've got lots and lots of things going on, but you're not necessarily going to find what you actually want.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you don't use the facility of the human being in that case, then the benefit of going into a store is lost, really.
Yeah.
I think if you can talk to people and ask for it, the equivalent of the search button, the people are the search button when it comes to going into the store, and you get a little bit more with those people as well. You get that personal interaction. And that was the thing that always would be part of the pleasure of going into those department stores that we've mentioned, you know, like some Marks and Spencer's and John Lewis, that you always felt you were talking to people, not just an employee.
Yeah. And I think there's something else that's going on, which is the online shops are creating offline shops. They really understand, from a digital perspective, they understand the data behind their consumers so they can create personalized experience in actual bricks and mortar stores. From your perspective, as I said, the creative, the branding side of things, what sort of advice would you give to those brands who are actually looking at that and sort of looking at sort of that direct-to-consumer relationship?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. The direct-to-consumer model obviously polarizes people in terms of their belief that that's a good thing for them to do, or is that how they can spend their time? And I don't know whether that's a generational shift that would work through. Pretty much all of my Christmas shopping this year was done online, and it was done online, but with the advice of real people. So whether that be my kids or my peers asking about things, that's how I kind of found the things that I was needing to find. But I found them all online. And that was, as I say, primarily as the result of my shrinking world through COVID. However, from a branding perspective, the online experience is quite an interesting one. You spend very much a different sort of time looking for things when you're shopping online. You know, before, all of the experience of that particular product that you were seeing for the very first time had to be discovered by turning the pack around. Whereas online, you see that information is something that you can look into should you want to do it. But one thing you do notice is that there's a lot of online versions of packs that are in store. So the extraneous information is stripped out so that that level of impact is gained far better online, it would seem, than a lot of brands would try to do within the store. I've never met a client yet who said, I'd like less information on the front of my pack. And yet, when it comes to the online experience, they know they're having to do versions which strip away some of that stuff that really just gets in the way, that becomes noise when you're starting to look at products on shelf, for example. Having that duality of existence, I'm surprised that there hasn't been many more lessons learned about stripping back things that go onto shelves. You know, the ability for us to decipher information when we go in shopping gets less and less as we go around the store and become more tired and fatigued that we can't find everything that we want. If all of that on-pack information was really rationalized to the absolute essentials, I'm sure that personal in front of the shelf experience would be far more pleasant and pleasurable and actually quicker than it is a lot of the time right now.
I think talking about stripping back in the packaging side of things, I was reading some scary stats. £5 billion of packaging wasted in Europe ends up in landfill, and that's three times the amount of waste the entire city of Seattle generates in a single year. So there's this big, big sort of sustainability agenda, and brands have a key part to play in that. And so what sort of advice and what sort of things should brands be doing to help fit into that sustainability agenda, especially not just around sort of the whole experience, but also that return side of things? In America, I think the average clothing return travels 1,200 miles. So how can brands be much more sustainable? What can they do to help create a much more sustainable agenda that consumers can really understand as well?
Yeah, I think it's that understandability that becomes the focal point of this, I think. Sustainability is such a multifaceted issue. I think there are many aspects that are brought into play when it comes to sustainability. And the obvious ones tend to be around packaging, for example, the reduction in plastics, the use of recyclable materials, or the use of biodegradable materials. And when you see the debate still rages as to whether something should biodegrade after it's produced or whether it should last for 50 uses. And I think that debate's going to go on for a little while, because when you recycle something 50 times or a bottle is used 50 times for something, it has to go, as you quite rightly say, back and forth so many times. So then you start to have the issue of carbon footprint becoming more and more into focus. And I think it means personal things to different people. And so, for example, my daughters really care about things like sustainability through the ingredients within products. So nothing with palm oils. They tend to buy nothing with palm oil in it, even though it's sustainable palm oils, because for them, the sustainability of palm oil is almost like an excuse to use something that you shouldn't be using. So for many people, I think it becomes a very personal interpretation of what sustainability means for them. And I think brands need to find the cause which best reflects their version of what sustainability is. And so ease of communicating that to consumers becomes critical. I mean, we talk about cutting out all the noise that goes on in the background. We mentioned, well, I mentioned the words carbon footprint. Now, as a consumer, I've heard those words. But as a consumer, and quite honestly, still as a professional, I'm not entirely sure what carbon footprint means. But I know that carbon footprint is bad, because that's what I've been told by government. And I do think there's a duality of responsibilities in terms of education for people from both a government and kind of leadership perspective in terms of helping people understand things. Carbon footprint is this intangible. It's a bit like fiber in foods. Yeah, I know fiber is good for me, but I don't know what it looks like, what it feels like, what it tastes like, but I just know it's good for me. And with carbon footprint, it's much in the similar vein, but infinitely more complicated. So I think explaining to consumers in a very simple way what their take on sustainability is, and that might be given back to a community. It might be supporting local communities about providing employment or employment for homeless people or people who have offended, for example. They're quite simple to grasp from a consumer perspective, you know, if they are single messages. And as I say, I think the governmental initiative is going to be an important one. In France, there is a goal by the French government that all supermarkets will have part of their store with non-packaged goods. And it's a percentage, something like 20% of the store will be without packaging. And I think that is something that I think really helps people to see that there's a job that they can do, but there's a job that the retailers can do and that the government can do, and information for that. We've got a huge journey to go on when it comes to this aspect of sustainability, and that needs to be stripped down into the different areas that can be made to be more or less important for each person that looks upon it, because we're all prepared to pay a little bit more for what we believe in when it comes to sustainability, but we need to be clear that the brands we're buying also feel the same way.
It's a really interesting point, that sort of carbon footprint. I think expectations are, if I buy something, I want it delivered the next day. And according to WHO, the last mile logistics, pollution is going to go up 78% in the next 8 years from that last mile logistics. That's quite a scary stat. So this whole going down to this low carbon footprint, I think it's not just the brands. I think it's the whole society. It's everyone who's got to take that part, which is, do I really need that product to come tomorrow? Can I wait and be much more sustainable in that way?
Well, I guess that is the case. It's not only that, it's, do I need that product?
Yeah.
And there's been a very interesting website that I've become aware of over the last few months called Buy Me Once. All of the products on that website are made to last. And of course, everyone talks about made to last, but they talk about made to last can be made to be fixed. They haven't got parts that have been made to the cheapest possible version of them. And we have got into this vicious cycle, haven't we, of purchasing, using it, oh, it breaks down, throw it away, buy a new one. And that's when you need it tomorrow, because you're so used to being able to get it tomorrow that you're not worried about sending it away to get fixed. You just throw it away and buy a new one.
It's so true. We could go on around sort of Apple and Samsung have not giving chargers away in their phones, because actually you end up with so many that just end up in waste.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big things going on in retail, and I think it's really up to brands to work with partners to really look at how can they make their retail strategy and their commerce strategy, both in store and online, work more favorably for them. Greg, thank you so much for your time today. I think that's all we've got time for, but it was a really, really interesting discussion. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Sue Benson, MD of The Behaviours Agency, and we help retailers create preference for their brands. We focus on five key areas. Community, and that's really building momentum, as you can imagine, through the lockdown and our desire to be local. The convergence of the technologies between digital and the social and the physical worlds. Convenience, and we all know from a behavioural science viewpoint how important ease is in terms of that shopper experience. The curation and really, really leveraging colleagues and how heroic they've been in lockdown. And finally, the simple pleasure of consumption, of touching, feeling, smelling, hearing. There's never been a more exciting time, in fact, to be in retail, and that's fundamentally why it's definitely going to resurge in 2022.
Thanks again to Greg from Honey. Really interesting to hear his thoughts on how brands can utilise their stores for greater commercial benefit. Now, when talking retail, digital is on the front of everyone's minds. With me is Neil Yeomans, who is the Performance Director for This Is Digital, a digital performance solutions agency in Manchester. Neil, welcome to Marketing Spice.
Hi.
There are some big topics happening in the world of retail and digital, so I'm really looking forward to talking through this with you. On my earlier podcast, Neil, I was talking about some of the levelling out of ages in online shopping. COVID's really accelerated the need for all generations to shop differently, and it's seen this huge year-on-year growth with online sales growing about 74% in January last year and 169% for mobile. UK is actually rapidly becoming a digital-first shopper, and retailers have been fast-tracking their digital transformation agendas. But still, traditional stores are showing signs of increasing importance again. From your perspective, how should brands be looking to use digital to help customers shop the way they want to shop?
Thanks for the question. It's a big one. So I think really importantly, what a lot of our clients are doing, what they call continuous improvement and iterative testing. So using things such as UX and Chrome, so user experience and conversion rate optimization. I think another thing that's really important is personalization. So using things like customer relationship management or CRM systems to actually build a proper database of your customers, where you're able to segment and you're able to, you know, to target really tailored communications against them. To get all this working, of course, you know, making sure that the data connections are right. So things between your CRM systems, your web analytics, and the holy grail would be in-store authentication as well, you know, if you have bricks and mortar. So there's a lot of work that goes onto that side.
And actually, just moving on to data, with the demise of cookies being sort of forecast for 2023 now, it is important that brands start to look at this data they have on their consumers. Many brands, FMCG especially, do not have necessary first-party data or that direct relationship with customers to deliver this omnichannel experience that consumers want. So what can brands be doing now to ensure that they are ready for the demise of cookies and that their first party data is going to be good enough to improve their direct relationships with their customers?
Yeah, and I think this is a, you know, really good question, because I think this is a, you know, the real issue at the moment in terms of, you know, how people navigate this. I think the thing as well is not all doom and gloom. You know, we still see, you know, first party cookies have been of, you know, reasonable effectiveness. It's really the third party cookie data, that retargeting side, that's really going to suffer. I think what's really important as well is it's all about making sure that you are using the sort of latest frameworks and technologies available from providers. For example, for people running Google Analytics, I think it's very important to set up GA4 to run side by side with GA. Reason being, it does more than just look at cookies. It does things like use modeling, you know, machine learning, etc., to factor in the fact that we are losing cookie data. Similarly with Facebook, people, especially, you know, social media managers, will be really struggling recently with the way iOS, you know, kind of proactively blocks, you know, targeting from Facebook. So things like moving to the conversion API, so server-side tagging for Facebook, making sure that your client-side tagging is all set up and making sure you're using all those events where appropriate. Now, these are the best things you can do at the moment.
And there's some big topics we're going to be talking about in this whole sort of podcast. One of them is around sort of social commerce. It's huge in the East and it's starting to come our way. In our last podcast, we talked with influencer marketing agency Crypt. We talked about the way influencers are creating their own brands and shopping channels. How are you advising brands in this space of social commerce, and how can performance channels work to support this growth?
Yeah, so let's come straight back to, again, you know, ROI and performance. You know, measurement of the ROI is the challenge of all of this. We're actually seeing some of our vendors move into more sort of impressions-aware attribution modelling to try to tackle this, to understand how it works as, you know, driving awareness through to conversion. And I think what's really important here is to understand where you are, you know, in the funnel, because something like using social commerce versus, say, using Google Smart Shopping, you know, we know that Smart Shopping, for example, is likely to drive pretty high ROIs on a last click basis. Whereas with, you know, what we're trying to advise with brands and social commerce is there's two things. It's the measurement side, but it's also understanding what the aim is. And if our expectation is it's an awareness exercise, then, you know, that's where, you know, we are at the moment. However, on the other side, you can't ignore the fact that if you get it right, that they can have a monumental impact on being able to actually drive product sales. And that's the dream, isn't it? And I think that's what a lot of people are looking for at the moment. They're really trying to find that influencer or someone who can really propel their products and shift a lot of volume. But what we see in our experience is by perhaps running more traditional campaigns where you are doing things like, you know, you're targeting audiences and you're being more fine-tuned and using Facebook's platform itself to market, then we're finding that's really effective too. We're also seeing a lot of PR agencies and creative agencies who are taking ownership of this side too. So suddenly seeing this blur from traditional digital marketing into PR and almost creative as well, which is an interesting shift as well.
It is interesting. And actually, this, that thing about authenticity is going to be sort of really key, I think, especially when talking about sort of the next topic, which is around the sustainability. And it's becoming this huge topic and focus for consumers. And actually, brands are having to follow their suit. Yet there's still this desire for consumers to have this next day delivery and that instantaneous fulfillment and desire to meet their needs. But that's causing huge issues logistically around the packaging and return side of things. How can brands really use digital to help give customers more informed decision-making and therefore choice around the impact of the next day delivery and their return side of things?
So that's kind of a loaded question in a way, isn't it? Because brands need to be really careful because in our experience, delivery, shipping costs, anything like that, they hugely impact buying behavior, hugely impact conversion rate, things like that. Because people, they will still want stuff fast. But then at the same time, we can't ignore that certain markets, especially fashion, for example, they can have really high returns rates, you know, over 30% sometimes. You can just imagine the environmental impact of that. And what's really important here is it's all about sizing, isn't it? If you drill down into what are the biggest cause of returns rates, it tends to be sizing orientated. People will often buy three sizes, for example, if they're not completely aware of how things are done, small, medium and large. Some things that you can do to really help it, for example, with clothing, you know, really showing real model, different body types, being really transparent and descriptive about the sizing information. Coming back to the offline side as well, maybe encouraging people to go into store if you have a store available to try before you buy. I think really about a clear presentation of product attributes as well. So as an e-commerce website, you really want to minimize people picking the wrong product variant. Don't want to be in a situation where someone goes on page, they buy something and then they realize, oh, actually on this page, I should have had that one instead. So one way of tackling that is the parent product structure. So you actually go onto a parent page and you configure your product to how you like it, you know, rather than having 10 separate product pages that opens up the possibility where someone might pick the wrong one. I think that's, you know, sort of our view on it, really.
I think those are really some really valuable points. And actually it goes back to that sort of whole, actually, how do you use your store to help prevent those returns happening? Because the last sort of big conversation is these logistical challenges. I think I read somewhere that the average return journey for a piece of clothing in the US is 1,500 miles. So these are big things that are going to happen. But we've also then got logistical and supply shortages, which happened in the second part of 2021 and potentially going to happen in sort of 2022 with COVID, with Brexit. We had the petrol crisis, shortage of butchers, shortage of paper, stock shortages. So sort of this whirlwind of things happening. And the prediction is that business will have similar issues in 2022. So going back to that question, the role of digital and helping brands and retailers support customers, inform customers in terms of what's going on, so that, again, customer satisfaction and engagement is much more personal and relevant for them?
Yeah, so I think being as real time as possible with delivery expectations and stock availability is critical. So to really understand, to really upfront that to the customer. So if there are issues and shortages, then you've got to clearly communicate that and signpost that on the site. And that'll help business to mitigate the issues, because, you know, customers can be, they are understanding, but not always just completely critical all the time. So if you are able to communicate it, I think that's the obvious first place to go. I think email could be quite an important channel as well to manage these expectations. And I think the other side of it as well is this element of rolling with it. We are likely to have times where reactive change is needed. As an example, one of our clients recently, but this happened quite a few times over Christmas, where we get sudden phone calls saying XYZ products out of stock, or we can't fulfill XYZ products, so we need to immediately pause our marketing spend around it. So that's really important as well. So that comes down to client agency communication, or whoever's managing that, those paid campaigns of being able to be that reactive. I think those are really important things that businesses need to be looking at, because that will, again, has a knock-on effect of, you know, being able to help support the customers.
It's true. And actually, I had two experiences. Just one, I just bought something from John Lewis and I got an email saying it's going to arrive in 2 days. And actually, 8 days later, it hasn't arrived. So I phoned them up and I said, oh, it's potentially going to arrive before the 21st of Jan. It's like, well, better comms, because actually it's frustrating to have to chase up from the customer's perspective. But the second thing, actually, this whole thing around stock levels and stock support, I suppose, is, I don't know if that's the right phrase, but it's that sort of thing where with lots of sales and promotions going on, and I think it happened with Black Friday, actually retailers ended up out of stock of their big ticket items for Christmas. So it's that sort of managing that digital expectation, but it's also ensuring that when you're promoting things, actually aligning with all the rest of the business so that you aren't reducing your potential margin and profit. Neil, thank you very much. It was really, really useful having you on and really informative. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
I'm Richard Medley. I'm the founder of communications agency Turning the Page. When it comes to brands and retailers behaving in a more human fashion, I think the most resonating stories are usually about people. So in communicating, retailers need to think from that perspective and not just about product. But to add more of that real-world human touch, I'd recommend looking within the business and using team members more as a new breed of influencer and brand ambassador. Because content and storytelling from that start point then hits the authenticity goal and builds a more relatable level of trust than perhaps working with external paid influencers might in what's an increasingly vital social selling space. And this can help you, I think, be seen as more of a listening brand and a human brand rather than a monologue brand.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Marketing Spice, and a really interesting one where we looked at what's next for retail marketing in 2022. Thanks again to Greg Vellance from Honey and Neil Yeomans from This Is Digital. Great to hear their thoughts and advice on some key areas affecting the sector at this moment in time. If you have any queries about anything you've heard, please do get in touch via the website, where we continue the conversation around retail trends. Thanks again for listening. Please do subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, talking all about utilities and managing the energy crisis. This has been Marketing Spice.
Find out more about the latest trends and insights in marketing at pimento.co.uk.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.